We still do 7 NUFC Matters show a week for free. But if you want to help support NUFC Matters, then there are a few ways of doing it. Hit the like button on each live broadcast and video. This helps the channel grow. Hit the subscribe button and select the all notifications bell so you don't miss a single show. If you want to help us financially, then you can join the channel using this button with the membership starting at $1.99 a month. Or you can drop us a donation in the chat using a super sticker. We're also looking for sponsors. If you'd like your brand advertised on the flyers for the show and featured during the ad break, then email John at nufcmatters.com to arrange today.
With you, well, if you've gone sour, you want the world plus everything, but it won't work an hour. And now your questions are guilt creeping, and you're going by our flowers. You throw away the dreams we had, boy. I want to allow it. I said we're gonna fall out. Let's see you get out. I think we're gonna fall.
Good evening, welcome to NUFC Matters with me, Steve Wraith, the professionals, with Stu and Mitch. Good evening, lads.
Evening, mate.
Good to see you. An hour and a half of crack about Newcastle United and taking your questions, which is what it's all about. Good evening to everybody in the chat. Premier League results today, if you haven't seen them already, Villa 0, Spurs 4, Brighton 1, Forest 0, West Ham 2, Burnley 2, West Ham 2-0 down in that game, Liverpool 1, Manchester City won. How Liverpool didn't win that one, I will never know. How does that leave things at the top of the table? Well, it leaves Arsenal in top of the table for a bit longer than I thought they would be, on 64 points. On goal difference, it has to be said, Liverpool in second place on 64, Man City in third place on 63. And Aston Villa, who, despite that drubbing by Spurs today, still hold the fourth place position on 55 points, but Spurs in fifth place with a game in hand, 2 points behind. The rest of the table going down towards us, sixth, Manchester United, 47 points. West Ham, that point, taking them above Brighton on 43 in seventh. Brighton on 42 points. Wolves in ninth on 41. And Newcastle currently on 40 points. Means we're staying up in 10th position. And of course, we play Chelsea tomorrow night at Stamford Bridge, who are currently 11th on 36. So, huge game for Newcastle tomorrow. We'll look at it a little bit later, but a win tomorrow night, of course, would take us 7 points clear with Chelsea really opening up that gap. But more importantly, it would take us back into 8th position above Brighton, possibly ahead of West Ham, actually 7th on goal difference, level on points, but on goal difference. So, comfortably placed for European football. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. Just want to talk to the lads, first of all, I guess, about that game today. I mean, you know, nauseatingly promoted by Sky, of course, you know, as if it's the only game that matters. But, I mean, it is a big game, Liverpool-Man City. They've occupied, those two teams have occupied the top two positions for the last 4 or 5 years. And, yeah, I mean, we didn't really get any answers today, did we? I mean, all we really saw, Mitch, was that Man City's poor form at Anfield continued and Liverpool didn't finish it off. They should have won that game. Mitch.
Sorry, man.
Yeah, I'm saying Liverpool should have won that game today.
Diaz had 3 good chances, didn't he? I mean, he really tried very hard not to score almost. It was bizarre. On another day, you'd hope they would wrap it up, but they didn't. I actually watched the UK coverage of the day, which I hadn't. Nauseating, to say the least. The questions beforehand asking Klopp and Guardiola about was there more to it because it would be their last game against each other. And Klopp seemed quite embarrassed about it, and Guardiola pretty much replied, what the fuck? It was interesting to see their reaction to it. Certainly did nothing for me. City should have had it wrapped up, really. I think the times they could have pressed harder, they seemed to back off it for a period and sort of play a bit more defensively. And then once Liverpool got a toehold in the game, they did what they've done quite well, actually, over this season is they have this kind of never give up attitude and they'll have a go. And they definitely had, certainly had a go at Man City. Injury to the keeper, which might affect things for us next week, you never know. Let's hope there's a few more injuries to pick up into that squad for ahead of the FA Cup game. But I think at the end of the day, it should have been Liverpool's game. It really should have. I think Diaz on another day was more likely to score than miss.
Yeah, I mean, lots of controversial decisions in that game. VAR had a lot to do in that game today, but various things not given. And yeah, 1-1, I think was flattering on Manchester City, Stu.
Yeah, they looked uncomfortable, didn't they? And I think Liverpool showed if you have a go at them rather than sit back and marvel about how brilliant they are and let them pass you to death. They'll always find the spaces, but if you get in, wrap the cages, make them pass the ball quicker, it forces the errors. And Liverpool played a high tempo, high pressing game, which is what we are capable of doing. But whether that happens next week or not, it's easier said than done, isn't it? But with the VAR decisions, there was a couple near the end that could have went in Liverpool's favour. And because it was Liverpool, I was quite surprised that they didn't get one of them. Even though none of them were penalties, I was still expecting it. Well, you know, we've had a look at this and it's Klopp's last season and, you know, you half expect it, don't you? But the right decisions were made. Edison taken off injured. Hopefully it's a 2-week injury. Walker looked a bit injured as well. That's a shame. And I think De Bruyne should get dropped for next week for his petulance. And I think we should... Also, I think they need to rest Haaland. He looks tired, so does Foden. And Rodri, possibly. You know, let's get as rid of as many as we can. But no, in all seriousness, they are two teams that we aspire to be. And they were at it hammer and tongue. But Man City, to me, they misfired. And I think that was because Liverpool, and you've got to admit, it was an understrength Liverpool team. They had a go. And they kept having a go. And does that bode well for us for next week? I don't know. We'll either get the sting in the tail or they might have sowed some doubts in their mind. And if we can do the same, then you never know. The FA Cup's all about shocks, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely is. Well done as well to our women once again today, running out 3-0 winners. They have extended their lead at the top of the FA Women's National League Northern Premier Division to 12 points with an away win against Stourbridge Women. We had two goals from Georgia Gibson either side of Emma Kelly's strike, and that was enough to pick up the big 3 points. So well done to them and their continuing quest for honours. If you've got a question for the lads or me, get them in and we'll do our best to answer them today. Neto, interesting. This one, Mitch. Craig Lee says, talk we're interested in Neto. Rumours are 60 million. Kids class, but not for me. His availability is similar to Wilson. I mean, Neto was, you know, limping around and went off against Newcastle. And then same again yesterday. It looked like a hamstring. I mean, I think Craig's got a point there, hasn't he?
I think given the season we've had with injuries, I think any incoming signing will be put under more than a microscope when it comes to injury history. I suspect we'll be very, very cautious when it comes to spending big money on somebody who's got a history of dubious hamstrings, for example. So, yes, it might prove a barrier. 60 million seems high, but we've got no idea where the market's settling at. The January market was so dead, it gave me no indication of what the market's like. Is that because totally of FFP? Is everybody keeping their cards close to the chest? Are they storing everything up for a summer window, which is going to be ridiculous? Who knows? Until the next set of accounts are published and everybody wades through everything and where they're going to be at. But yeah, I would tend to agree. Class act when he's on the pitch. but seems pricey given his availability through injuries and given our injury history this season. I think any signing we make, if there's any doubt on the injury front, we'll either low ball or we'll avoid.
What about you, Stu? Would you go for Neto? I mean, 60 million as well. Hell of a lot of money, that.
It is, but on the theme of Neto, he has to be an improvement on what we've got, the right wing, doesn't he? I've been thinking all day about that.
I was going to say, was that a little joke there, Stu?
Hey!
Right. Anyway, but not. I think we have to learn from the summer transfer window, where it looked like they were trying to pad the squad out rather than improve the first 11. And it's, I'm of the opinion, as you know, that I think we'll get three or four first-team signings in for considerable fees. And Neto, although he's had his injury this season, I think if he finishes this season strongly, not too strongly to keep Wolves below us, but if he finishes in good form and in good health, he's definitely an improvement on what we've got on that in his position. So I'm not against that, or someone like Rafinha. Anyone who's going to improve what we've got is in a starting 11 has to be looked at, has to be considered. And for someone like Neto, he knows the league, and that's something that works in our favour. He won't need this bedding in time that a lot of the signings have had. He could literally hit the ground running, good pre-season behind him, and go straight into the team. So if that's the route they're going to go down, then I'm all for it.
Okay. Alan Thompson, good evening. He says, Stu, you're wondering whether we get beat off City 6 or 7-0. How are you? Move on with Chelsea tomorrow. Steve's already said we're getting beat off them 5-0, and they're a poor team. Yeah. It's the reverse psychology, Alan. It's the reverse psychology. We'll keep to it. It worked last week. And Paul and Mark says, remember, we've got Mintley coming back on the right wing, scoring goals for fun in Holland. I mean, it's a lower standard, Mitch, isn't it? I think, you know, and there seems to be some kind of, you know, not official confirmation, but perhaps that Minty might go back out on loan again next season.
Maybe, and if it's to somewhere like Feyenoord, like we've touched on earlier this week, he's had Champions League experience, and he'll get that again more than likely at Feyenoord. The Dutch League, yes, it's maybe not the standard week in, week out of the Premiership, but there's still some good teams in there, and there's still some good footballers in there. That's why they qualify for the Champions League regularly and get through to the knockout stages regularly in teams like Ajax and PSV in particular, but Feyenoord too occasionally. So, you know, they're not necessarily mugs either. And if we're getting the development out of the player that we need to see, it's win-win. That said, if Eddie likes what he sees when he comes back in the pre-season, he's got every chance of making the squad, because we're going to have some squad churn too. So yeah, it's in his hands, really. How you impress Eddie Howe when you come back, I think it's up to him.
I mean, he's scoring goals. He looks talented, Stu, but I am a bit concerned. And I do think another season on loan would be more beneficial for him. But yeah, it's certainly one to look at over the course of the summer, I would imagine.
Yeah, I agree with you, Steve. I'm of the opinion that they'll bring him in for pre-season, have a look at him, make him feel a bit welcome, and sit down with him and say, look, this is your plan. This is the plan that we have for you, and send him out again for one more year. But hopefully with the caveat that they can claw him back as and when. And for me, it would make sense to send him back to Feyenoord. I'm sure they'd be willing takers, and it would help with his development rather than send him somewhere different. You know, send him back to what he knows and see if he blossoms again, see if he takes a step up for the second season there. And anything he does will only be a benefit to us, whether it's a sale in the future, as we've discussed on recent shows, or he actually does come into our squad the season after. So as long as they have something in where they can bring him back, if we have a freak injury season like we've had this year, then all for it. If he's not going to be starting every week, which I suspect he wouldn't be, then it'd be better for his development and long-term for us if he's playing consistently abroad as well, because hopefully we'll be having European campaigns for many seasons to come. So it's good to have people with that experience under the belt at such a young age.
Ken Robinson, good evening, says, will these people they've not watched Minté regularly. Stop putting pressure on the lad already. He is not Premier League ready. Ken obviously watches Minté. I would agree, Ken. I think he needs to go back out on loan. I think, he's not going to be the answer, I don't think, next season. I think Newcastle as well, you would imagine, are going to have quite a bit of money to spend in the summer, and hopefully they'll be addressing a few of these issues and positions over the course of the summer. Good evening, Ifty. Sure, if we sell Miggy, that will dictate it. And of course, we know that they did try to get rid of Miggy Almiron in the winter window to Saudi for 30 million, but it didn't come off. Jersey Mag, good evening. He says, if they scrap FFP, should they just split the EPL money evenly and have each club spending? Have the player wage budget and transfer budget level the playing field. No club can carry debt. I mean, I think we've all got ideas what we'd like to see, Mitch. But at the moment, we're stuck with FFP. The news as well this week that, Aston Villa have now, broken the rules. They've gone above the profit and sustainability rules. They allowed £105 million losses and they've announced £109.6 million deficit. So, another club potentially with issues coming up.
It's all a bit of a mess. But at the same time, clubs have known what the score is. And some have tried to play it very carefully and others have been wanting in their attitude towards it. I think Villa haven't necessarily been outrageously spending, but it just shows the situation that you are. Like we've had, you want to sort of nudge that top four, you're going to push your sustainability rules. And that's really, it's exposed what it was all about. And it was all about protectionism. It was all about protecting the haves. I've thought for a long time, not including debt in FFP, exactly, Craig. It's not worth a toss until you start to look at how the debt. That was always about the introduction European wide to keep Real Madrid and Barcelona happy, and they can carry lots and lots of debt, but then pull their various economic levers, as they call them, to try and fudge the boundaries. Real Madrid's pièce de résistance, selling their training ground to the local authority in Madrid and then renting back at a peppercorn rent every year. It was one of the most classic examples of that. So in some ways, yeah, until they look at debt, because you also have to remember Man United were bought in a leveraged fashion. The debt was lumped on Man United when the Glazers bought it. That's why their fans are upset about it. But it hasn't actually really affected them from an FFP point of view. And now they've got a 25% owner who everybody forgets is only a 25% owner, yet is allegedly allowed to call all the shots from a football perspective. How does that all work? Are there suddenly a company within a company? How does all of that come together? And it's fascinating and how that's going to work out. Because everybody seems resistant to talk about debt. When you've got the clubs, the so-called Big Six, nearly all leveraged to... Derek, it's actually a bed, mate. the way they're most of them anywhere near £1 billion in debt, and yet it doesn't seem to be taken into account. And I get the questions when people say, well, why can't PIF just loan us £1 billion and we'll pay it back interest free? Well, there's rules in there to stop that too. And that's where it's wrong. And until they look at leveraged buyouts, which screw clubs over time and time again, they've got another one coming up with Everton to look at with 777 partners who are... Well, honestly, they make Chinese blokes who try and buy properties in the Middle East with a shell company with a 9-year-old as a director look like honest and above board, because the whole 777 seven partners situation is a shambles. There's still questions about whether that effectively shoveling away drug money to pay for everything. All the clubs seem to be in bother that are associated with them, yet Everton have got about, I think it's about 250 million in loans to them, which I'm sure will be taken into account if they're allowed to buy Everton. And then effectively it's become another leveraged buyout. And that needs to stop. It needs to stop because it's not fair. It nearly did for Burnley. Burnley are very, very lucky that they were able to come back up the way they did, because the leverage buyout nearly finished them. Come very, very close. And so there's lots of things within football finances that need addressed. And they all have an impact on FFP. But while the football authorities blindly go on, none of these things really are going to be resolved. Yeah, and yes, Hayden left the club he was on loan at because of non-payment of wages from 777 side. Yes.
Yeah, the FFP thing is something which we scratch our heads about on here, you know, week after week, to be honest, Stu. And, you know, lots of people really, you know, are in the same boat. If the Everton Forest situations continue into June and Leicester start off with minus points, will this focus minds in developing a workable FFP PSR for the future? It almost seems to me as if the authorities have just buried their head in the sand, Stu, because... You know, the Everton appeal and subsequent, you know, 10-point reduced to six. I just think that's made a farce as well. If you're going to give a penalty, then that's the penalty. You know, I just think the whole thing is a mess. I think it's self-destruct, and I'm not sure where we'll go with it.
I agree, but there's the thing that I think it was last week we mentioned it. What's really frustrating is nobody knows what the penalties are, and it's as if they put their hand in a lucky dip bag and pull out, okay, you've got that many points, you've got that many points.
Yeah.
If the stipulation's in place, everyone knows what the punishment is for the breach and how severe the breach is. So if you, because the way it is, if you've spent over it, as Mitch rightly said, these are your rules, you have to play by them. So those who are playing by them shouldn't be discriminated for those who haven't, because they get let off with it, you know. But then there's a case for someone who's only 10 million over, or someone who's over 200 million over. If it's the same punishment, then why not just go 200 million over? It's a great bugbear. I had this conversation with Mitch on Friday when we were in the car going to start with session. Was the bugbear for me is the teams are allowed to carry debt, like the Man United's, like the Tottenham's, yet they can still go and spend 100 plus million every single window. How is that allowed? You know, if it's financial fair play, well, you're in debt, you shouldn't be allowed to spend until you're out of debt. But the issue we've got, there's a two-tier financial fair play. There's one for the Premier League and then there's one for Europe. So I think there would be enough pressure from the clubs to change the Premier League one, but then how does it not going to affect it for Europe? So there needs to be change from the very top. But I think it's becoming clearer now to the masses. It's not just Newcastle fans complaining about it because we won the lottery with the PIF takeover. A lot of teams are now being affected by it. And like the spending's been nullified, yet they can watch teams with the debt still spend more than them. So in other words, you can't catch us. You can't spend money to catch us. And if you get into debt, then you're going to get hammered anyway. But we're still allowed to be in debt. So the teams that like Nottingham Forest have got a wealthy owner, and I get it, if his shipping business goes the wrong way, then that could affect Forest. But there is things that they can do. You know, we've talked about escrow accounts previously, where you put enough money in to cover the club for a year, 18 months or whatever, so the new buyer takes it on. Once the club is then stable again, the money gets released back to the previous owner. But to me, the ideas are simple. The answers are simple, but it's who it upsets. So when you've got teams like Villa and Newcastle, and to a point West Ham, who are willing to spend more money and can't, how can they ever close the gap? when teams with debt can still spend more money than you. You know, so it's not a level playing field. And I understand that the other clubs generate more money, but unless we spend the money to climb the league, to win the trophies, we'll never generate the same money anyway. So it's a closed shop. So the you see that there's, to me, there's three groups in the league. There's those that are getting looked after. There's those that want to better themselves, and those that are just grateful to be there. And one of the ones that have been most outspoken against us has been Crystal Palace. That's the board and the fans. It's now starting to affect them. And if they go down with their ownership model, then they'll soon start crying. It wouldn't be, oh, look what Newcastle are doing, because we still don't know the names of their owners. So how can that be fair? Their owners could be anyone, but that's all right. That's acceptable because they're nice. They just get patted on the head and they just agree with the favoured people, shall we say. So things will change and we will be the main beneficiary of it because we have the most money to spend. But again, just because you've got the money to spend doesn't guarantee success. Everton are case in proof, aren't they? The fact that they went gung-ho for a few years, they've now got a board that can't afford or doesn't want to be in place. They've got people who say they want to buy them, so the Everton fans are falling down the be careful what you wish for trap. The 777 or 777 who are trying to buy them are trying to buy them with someone else's money. And they're getting charged extortionate interest rates when it gets passed on to Everton, so sooner or later that club's going to fold.
Columbia cartel's money.
Yeah, exactly. let the club fold, and or they allow the takeover to happen, and then it'll fold. So they've got themselves into such an issue by trying to compete, and that's the thing. They've been trying to compete, and that shouldn't be. That shouldn't be frowned upon. You know, it's good that they're trying to compete, and it was bad management, bad signings, etc. But that's where financial fair play was effective, where it says, look, you're spending too much for what you're getting. Now, they were banking on getting higher league positions and everything else. And had they finished 5, 6, 7 places higher in the league for one of the seasons, that would have made the 20 million deficit up that they claim they've been done for. But it was over 200 million. But they pulled out every single excuse they could get to lower their debt down for on Everton's sake. But why would Newcastle not be allowed to spend as much as they wanted? You can't say that their owners don't have the money. Same with Villa, they've got very wealthy owners. They can spend the money. So if the Premier League are still wanting to favour, shall we say, the three red teams at the top, then they're going to have to put things in place because Chelsea are going to be struggling with it soon. Arsenal couldn't spend in the window. It's affecting everybody now. And then when it affects everybody, the winter window was the perfect example. It then affects the brand, and that's the thing that's going to hurt the Premier League more. So I can see them buckling, but putting it across that they've reassessed things and they're taking things into consideration, and they'll give it a bit more leeway, but it still won't be in our favour. And that's the thing that's going to frustrate until huge changes are made.
You see, I think people are talking about the European FFP, which to me actually, in some ways, is more strict, but in other ways, makes more sense because what they want to control is wages against turnover. And if you look at the history of clubs that go pop, it's when that figure starts to spiral out of control that's when they run into trouble. You know, Portsmouth at one stage before they went bust the second time, I think we're running at something like 223% wages to turnover, which is just ludicrous. It's what makes football a really weird business, because if I run my business at 60% wages to turnover, I'll probably not make any profit and I'll be running into trouble pretty quickly. Yet the talk about clubs having a 75% wages to turnover in football has been a good thing. There's no other business is allowed to run like that. It's mad. So I get why they'd want to get hold of that. But again, the trouble with UEFA is they're always trying to keep certain individuals in Europe happy, the same way the Premier League are trying to keep certain clubs happy. It's always the same clubs, isn't it, really? But it's always difficult. And until somebody actually actively challenges it, be that somebody just gets sick and says, come on then, I do genuinely believe Chelsea deliberately are failing it. because again, they believe they'll not get a sporting penalty. Now, whether their opinions changed after the Everton ruling, I don't know, because it's quite clear in the Everton ruling, in spite of what some Evertonians will tell you, that a sporting penalty is indeed applicable in this case, hence the points deduction. It's just the points deduction wasn't made in the correct manner. And so, there you go. Middlesbrough, that's why I don't know how much money their owner must have spunked up the wall keeping his town's club running over the years, but they must be very grateful to him.
No, they're definitely not. I mean, I do that breakfast show in the morning, and they don't even seem to have any gratitude towards him, Mitch. It's beggars belief.
He's kept that club going when I'm quite sure a lot of other people would have just let it go. I mean, 175% wages to turnover in the Championship. And they're not alone in the Championship. That's not an unusual figure. I believe they're one of eight Championship clubs who are on the verge of a transfer embargo soon. and that's, you know, the step below. Our dear friends down the road are in a lot bigger trouble than they realise as well. Hence why they've got the manager that they've got. Because he's matey with the sporting director. And I don't think there's an appetite to pour millions of pounds into the club from their owner. And so I think that's a challenge further down the league. But in the Premiership, it really is a problem for clubs once that figure starts to get beyond a certain point. If several came together to challenge the Premier League regarding it, interesting. The Premier League would probably kick the can down the road in every way, shape or form as they can. We know that's what their tactics tend to be, is to obfuscate and delay and try and just keep kicking the can down the road. What happens if a number of clubs just said sod it? I've got to say, if I was in PIF's position and if I genuinely believed the worst that could happen for, you know, a 2 million overspend was 10 points, I think I'd take my chances.
It's six now, isn't it?
Well, that's it, because you don't know how it's going to be applied. But even if you said 10, what's the worst that can happen? If you've trotted away and spent the money and turned yourself into a hyper-competitive team and you've got no chance necessarily of being relegated out of that penalty, and you might have a good showing in the cups, and then you put it right over the next couple of years. It would take a brave person to do that. Like I say, I suspect that's what Bowley was hoping to do, and he's probably been stopped in his tracks by the Everton ruling. It's complicated, as ever. But it's getting to the point where, and I've said this before, people, and it's not just the supporters, it's now the owners of other clubs are starting to use the words we were using 2.5 years ago, and being ridiculed for. Yeah. And now the scales have been removed from their eyes and they're seeing things for what they are. They're thinking, well, hang on. Were we right? Yeah, we were. We told you so. Does it give us any gratitude to turn around to people and say, I told you so? Not really. Because at the end of the day, everybody loses out then. Protectionism, cartel-like behaviour seems to be rife through the game. And even the appointment of a government-appointed regulator of football, I don't think will change things.
No, but Mitch, you see, when we actually did get taken over, there was a, especially from what was then the six clubs, there was a, you could see, or you could read, you could feel the fume coming from them, and the demanded answers from the Premier League, and things started to get implemented. Rules were changed suddenly to nullify or to stem in Newcastle's growth. But what they didn't realise is long-term it's going to affect their own, because there's three things that Newcastle could have done at that time, or even still could now. And it's lend themselves money at a low interest rate, get themselves into debt, because apparently it's okay to be in debt and spend loads of money. get themselves into debt and then get a really low interest rate back. But they've stopped that, haven't they? They brought a rule in to stop us doing that. The next one is we could sell players to anyone we wanted. Ah, but if it's to a Saudi club, we can get 40 million for Fabinho. We'll give you money for Henderson. We can do this, that, the other. But once he gets in maximum there, oh, it can only be 20 million maximum. And it has to be fair in someone else's eyes, not in the two clubs who were dealing's eyes. I can understand if they said, right, we'll pay 100 million for ASM. That I can get. But for me, he was a £30 million signing all day long. But again, Newcastle trying to play within the rules and cause no consternation and trying to do things the right way. They seem to like hamper themselves with it. The third one is get sponsorship. Now, who can decide? And I had this discussion with someone on Twitter during the week. How could you decide the impact of sponsorship? We'll keep using Aramco because that's the easiest one to do. They're one of the wealthiest companies in the world, if not the wealthiest company in the world. They've spent hundreds of millions on other sports, like motor racing for one. So why couldn't they just say, right, okay, we want to be known or associated with a top team in the top league. So why can't they come in Newcastle and say, right, we'll give you 80 million a year to get our name on our shirt, or we'll give you 100 million to have the naming rights for the stadium for the next 10 years. Something similar to what Emirates did with Arsenal. Why can't they do that? Oh, well, then it has to be fair. But how can someone in the Premier League office who doesn't know his arse from his elbow most of the time decide what impact that has on, for example, the region is talking about, for the MENA region or the GCC, the Middle East? How it's about status, and to be associated with the leading Saudi business, which is PIF, to be associated with them gives you great kudos. But to have your shirt, your name, your company on a name of a shirt that's in the Premier League gives you even more. So it's all by association, and that can have a huge effect in this region. But how can someone in London decide, no, that's too much? If someone's willing to pay it, they believe it's good value because they'll have their own books they've got to justify anyway. One way or the other, they can't say, right, we're going to spend 80 million a year on something and expect to gain 20 million a year back from it. Although Chevrolet did that for Man United, didn't they? But that's all right. You know what I mean? There's so much that can be done. So don't do as we do as we say. And the Premier League should be treating all shareholders equally. And they've clearly changed two or three rulings within the last 2 years to stop Newcastle's growth. So how can we grow? They say do it organically. What, Liverpool spent more money than anyone else in the 70s and 80s because they had the pools money. Man United had generated more money because they were a bigger club. So they've been able to spend more money, that I get. But they've got themselves in a position. Tottenham are running that position because they got the debt. We were bigger than Tottenham before Mike Ashley took over. And that's fact. That's shown on every single account you can look at. All money generated, sponsorship, everything. Newcastle United were bigger than Tottenham. So how can Tottenham now, who still won nothing in that period, then say they're bigger than us, we've got loads of debt, but we can still spend a new con? And that's where now more and more people are waking up to it, saying the system's not fit for purpose. And that's can only work in our favour as long as the ones who are happy to go along with it, as in the Crystal Palace, etc., until it starts affecting them personally, they will then have to side with us. And if it's a case of letting one of the 14 grow at a rate that we could grow at, then it's going to have to do it, or they'll start losing their own league positions because they cannot spend to maintain it. Because I guarantee you, when Leicester and Leeds come back up next season, they won't go back down. So that puts us a bigger squeeze on the bottom of the table. And that's why they can't spend money, because the rules that they put in to stop us is now stopping them spending money. So it'll bite them eventually.
There's loads of stuff. I mean, that example of Man U and Chevrolet sponsoring their shirt is the classic example of what regional sponsorship may mean to a Premier League club that we now suddenly are being questioned about. When Chevrolet sponsored Man United's shirt, was it something like 25 vehicles that they sold in the UK over that period of time of sponsorship? And obviously, as a worldwide brand, and yes, they've got associated brands in the UK, but Chevrolet themselves sold 25 UK vehicles during the term of this shirt sponsorship. Yeah, everybody just says, yeah, it's fine, that's Man United shirt sponsor, no bother. Not appreciating what Seller may be gaining regionally without doing a damn thing in the UK. But they're making sure they are going to be doing things in the UK just to keep the cherry on the top of the cake. And it's ridiculous that suddenly things are being treated differently in plain sight, and everybody just scratches their chin and nods in agreement and says, get on. We've got a mad situation you mentioned about teams coming up, that Leicester could be promoted and immediately hit with a points deduction. In part created by the fact that they got relegated. And that just starts to make a real sport nonsense of it all. And that's where it all needs to be aimed out and sorted out for me. And why a better balance, particularly with, for me, I keep coming back to wages turnover being one of the key metrics that they should be using, because then it's more fair. And, you know, when you've got people sitting on £1 billion worth of debt preaching about running football clubs, it's a sorry state indeed.
Lots of comments coming in. Thanks to Broken Flask. Says, love the straight, honest, genuine discussion. Heartfelt opinions in this show. That's why NUFC Matters is the only place I go to for NUFC news. Thank you, mate. Very kind. Always get sensible questions in the chat as well. Sanjeev says, question for Mitch. My dentist said brushing alone doesn't prevent tooth decay. So should me and my wife brush our teeth together?
I like that.
Tenali, let's move tact a little bit. This is an interesting one. We've seen a few of these stories flying around over the course of the last couple of weeks. Talk about him potentially getting another ban. I think most of us felt that if he was going to get another ban, it would have run concurrently. And Ifty mentions it as well. What's your thoughts on the Premier League looking at Tenali and banning him until the end of 2024? Speculation this at the moment, media speculation, but It was rumoured, Mitch, right at the start of the whole process, that there may well be another investigation by the Premier League, and that we could end up with him, you know, missing the game for another few months.
The question will be, what were his betting activities while he was playing for Newcastle United? And if the FA feel that was inappropriate, they will ban him. And I can almost guarantee they won't run anything concurrently, not for us. We'll get the thin end of the wedge out of that. Do I think it'll happen? Who knows? It's too quiet for me in terms of there's nobody's admitting or denying what's going on, and I don't like that. But the club seem to be keeping them involved with everything, even down to the daft games on YouTube that they're doing. And he certainly seems to be still very much involved with the squad, which would suggest the club are assuming he'd be back for the start of next season. But at the minute, it's a lottery. Who knows? Who knows where they're going to go with it? And it sticks in me cross seeing Zaniolo running out for Villa today. Where was his suspension after he was called in? And is he just ratted everybody out and run away with it? Who knows?
Yeah.
But certainly, I'd be disappointed if they don't try and see if, well, okay, look, he's served his punishment from the Italian FA. Yeah. Can we go easy on him now because he's come clean? But if he's broken any rules while he's been a Newcastle United player, they'll punish him. But like I say, I don't see any ban running concurrent. Just don't.
Yeah, Stu, it'd be a nightmare, that, like, if he gets another ban, wouldn't it?
I'm of the opposite opinion. I think it's just mischief making more to unsettle Newcastle. If he has done it, they would have been aware of it at the start. He wouldn't wait till the end of his ban and say, oh, by the way, you did this last year. It was all done in the clear. And if it is done, it's just another signal to show what the Premier League are treating us with contempt. Because if you're going to charge someone, you've got to charge them and say, OK, we'll run the case at this stage. Just as they've done with the clubs, they should do with the players. You can't wait until you serve your ban and then say, right, we'll do it that way. But getting back to what we were talking about earlier regarding the spending the money, there's a difference between not being able to spend the money and not willing to spend the money. Some clubs have got chairmen or boards of directors who don't want to spend the money. Others are able to and not allowed to spend the money. And that's the difference which they need to get sorted out. But Tenali, I think as soon as his ban's finished, he'll be back in the team. And maybe that's just me being positive. But if we're giving positive news out, I heard today that Joe Linton's contract will be announced this week. So how about that?
Okay.
That's all done and dusted, and he's met with anyhow, and he's met with Amanda, and he's said he wants to go, and he's took more of a role than just leaving it to his agent, and he's signified he wants to stay. And as I understand it, as I was told just earlier today, he will. It should be announced this week that Tenali's had his contract extension on a higher wage. So that's good news.
Fingers crossed it is true. We will wait and see. But I would imagine they'll announce it in international week. They tend to do that, Newcastle, when there's nothing doing. They like to make sure that they're still in the headlines. But we will wait and see if Stuart is right. But for now, we're going to go into the ads.
A big thanks to all our sponsors, Skips and Bins. Go to their website, skipsandbins.com. Email inquiries at skipsandbins.com or telephone 0800 25 45 25 3. Easy contract free and pay-as-you-go waste collection. Thanks to Mr. Vicky's Sauces, handmade in Cumbria. Go to their website, mrvickys.co.uk. Email info at mrvickys.co.uk or telephone 01768 210 102. Thanks to United Group Travel. Go to their website, unitedgrouptravel.com. Email info at unitedgrouptravel.com or phone 01670 632 460 or mobile 0791 666 4174. They're a local company from Morpeth and there are no strangers on our tours, just friends you haven't met yet. Big thanks to Media Arts for all the help with the video side of things. And if you want to subscribe to the channel, hit the subscribe button under the video. Click the thumb up to like the video and click share to share to your social media. If you want to help the channel financially, you can pay a one-off £25 fee. You get a cup, a scarf, a pen and a membership card and entry into the NUFC Matters monthly draw. Email john at nufcmatters.com for more details. Or if you've got a smartphone, scan the QR code now and it takes you straight to the membership pack. We also support the food bank on this channel. Go to nufcfansfoodbank.co.uk and you'll find the match day bucket. You can make a donation virtually today. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify and other podcast providers. We also do events during the year. NUFC Matters Live will be at the O2 City Hall on Friday the 2nd of August for an evening with Rob Lee, One Night in Antwerp. Tickets start at £15 and you can get them from Ticketmaster.co.uk. An evening with the entertainers takes place on Friday the 24th of January 2025 at the Tyne Theatre and Opera House in Newcastle. Telephone 0844 249 1000 or visit the website tynetheatreandoperahouse.uk to buy tickets today. You can also catch me on the North East Footy Breakfast Show live on Toon Radio weekdays 7 till 9 a.m. on DAB, smart speakers and the Toon UK.
Got 10 minutes left on the NUFC Matters auction. Get yourself onto the link. It's in the chat. Got some great items up for grabs. 10 minutes left on the NUFC Matters auction for this week. And don't forget the end of season due, 20th of July. Tickets are at tenner. Money going to Dementia Matters. Got Superman and Gibbo. Got George doing an Ask George as well live on stage. And the Long Sands are doing an acoustic set with Trev and Gaz. And a few other special guests as well. But £10 a ticket, money to Dementia Matters, 5 till late, 20th of July, newcastlelegends.com or nufcmatters.com. And the Peter Beardsley tickets are now on sale on Woucher, so get yourself onto Woucher to buy your Peter Beardsley talk-in tickets for the 2nd of June. Okay, lots of comments coming in about FFP, as you would imagine. Stephen just said, with FFP holding us back, what do you think our budget would be in the summer, Mitch? It's a great question, especially with us not spending anything.
Well, I haven't spent now, and we've got all the new sponsorships kicking in. Mm-hmm. So how do we balance all that out? It's a really good question, and I've got a. I personally don't have an England. I suspect we've got some clever signings lined up, though, and I suspect we're going to have a degree of churn in that squad. We've got to, not just for FFP terms, but for freeing up wages and things like that. So, don't have a clue, but I've got a feeling it might be a little exciting.
Okay, Stu?
I've said before that I think we'll go big this summer for some of the reasons that Mitch has just mentioned, the new sponsors, the Champions League money, etc. There'll be players sold. And remember, if you spend, the figure I said was 200 million plus, if you spend that, it's not really 200 million plus. If you do it over 5 years, take the wages into account, you might have spent 50 or 60 million, which would cover the seller deal and the Champions League money alone. And that's without touching the TV money. They'll get a lot of deadwood off the wage books, which will help cover the new signings coming in. And I'm sure there'll be more sponsorships announced as well. And it'll be a case of now contest this. I think we'll flex our muscles big time this summer. I really do.
Alan, I agree with you. He says, I honestly believe tomorrow night will decide if we've got European football next season, as I believe Chelsea and Man U are poor teams and are there for the taking. We need to win simples. Yes, I agree with you, Alan, on that. And he also said, finally, all the clubs are waking up to the fact that these rules were put in place to keep the big six in place. Our takeover opened the window so everyone could see, will things change? I think they will. I think it's inevitable that it will change. Ifty says, regarding Minty, would you send him to the Championship or one of the newly promoted Premier League teams to see if he can do it there? No, you're both shaking your head there.
No, I don't see it's a step back, wouldn't it?
I think it's an old-fashioned idea now. Send them to the Championship to get them toughened up. The lads playing Champions League football at Feyenoord. Mm-hmm. What more can you want than that? You know, don't need them toughened up these days because refs blow from the wind knocking people over sometimes. So it's not quite the same thinking. Plus the fact looking at the standard of the football in the Championship these days, it's not very good.
Yeah, you agree, Stu?
Yeah, it'll be a backward step for him. The young lad's been playing European, well, he's been playing Champions League football. So how can you say we've got your best interests at heart and then put him in the Championship? It's not good for him. If you want the best out of him, you've got to, as I said earlier, sit him down, lay out a path for him and say, this is what we hope to happen, this is what we expect to happen, and put it back onto him. You can go back there again and solidify yourself as one of the Europe's up-and-coming superstars and come back to us next season where we think we can get you to the team. And that should be a big enough carrot. And if he decides he doesn't want to come back or he'd rather not come back, then we sell him for a big profit, which is, again, goes into the financial fair play.
Yeah. Isn't the Championship the hardest league in the world, says Kenny? I wouldn't say it was the hardest league in the world.
It's a league like quicksand. Mm. Once you start to struggle, you get pulled further down.
Yeah, look at what happened to Sunderland.
It's the most competitive league because on any given day, the top team can lose to the bottom team. But it's becoming less like that now because of the era of parachute payments. If you look at the difference with the teams that went down and coming almost straight back up again. And it's really basically a churn of four or five teams that are cycling around, going down and coming back up yo-yo style again. And the Macklems are a great example of what happens is when you plummet further. And on the basis of yesterday, they must be wondering what the hell is going on. I mean, I watched a good chunk of the Macklem game yesterday. And it was pick. I couldn't watch a team like that on a regular basis. It'd probably tip my blood pressure over the edge. So yeah, very, very difficult. But it doesn't mean it's a good league to put a player in to improve him for us. I'd still rather see a good development outside of England, with a focus on, if we're talking about being competitive in Europe, let's get them experience in Europe so they know what it's like to go to Ajax, they know what it's like to play in a big European stadium with passionate fans and things like that. So I think for me, I just don't get putting players in the Championship anymore.
I guess where Kenny says it's not his opinion, it is the hardest to get out of that league. He says, remember, it took Forest 19 years to get out of that division. I think the worrying thing about the Championship is it's the gap between the Championship and the Premiership's worrying now. It used to be a lot closer, Stu.
Yeah, but if you look at the teams at the top of the Championship this season, it's the ones in the last two or three years that have been relegated. West Brom, I think they're in the last year, aren't they, of the parachute payment, and they're making a late push for it. And what you'll find is if they don't get up, they'll just start to stay mid-table after that because they have to offload players and start clearing some of the debt off. But you've got Leeds, the three teams went down, was it? Leeds, Leicester and Southampton. I think they're in the top three or four. And I don't think those are the three that come back up.
Yeah, there's only Ipswich who interloped into the three of them.
Yeah, and if you which is an exception rather than the rule, isn't it? Yeah. And then if you look at the bottom end of the Premier League, it's the ones that came up last season, isn't it? But again, these aren't allowed to spend. And if you do, like Forrest did to make sure they stayed up, then they get punished. I mean, it was crazy. It raised everyone's eyebrows when they were signing 20-odd players, but they had to because of what they had to survive on in the Championship with all the loan players. So it's like, okay, you've got yourself up, but don't dare try and spend to stay up, even if you can't afford it. And it goes back to what we talked about at the top of the programme. So the way the Championship, I can understand the question or the statement saying it's the hardest thing. Maybe it's the hardest thing to get out of, but it can be done. You know, Luton are the best examples of it. Where they've come from over the last few years has been exceptional. But it's, again, that is the exception rather than the rule, isn't it? You won't see teams like that. Even in the lower leagues, the team that have the money, you've got Wrexham, and they look like they're going to get promoted again. But as you go up a league, the wages become bigger. And then will the revenue get any higher? That then goes back on the owners. And unless you've got owners who are willing to spend the money and run the club at a loss for a year to try and then get up again, it creates its own problems. And this is where football's starting to eat itself. It's trying to serve the few rather than the many. And it will change because it'll have to, because you'll start seeing now, not just the Premier League, but in the Championship and below, clubs will be going bust just trying to survive, trying to compete. And if not, the game's gone, isn't it? The whole idea is, this is why we love the FA Cup so much, where the smaller teams get the day and they can beat the bigger teams. But it's becoming more and more, I wouldn't say monotonous, but predictable, where you can start thinking that you know you get the odd Leicester occasionally, but you look at who's won the FA Cup the last 10, 15 years, and it's always been one of the big six, hasn't it? If you take Leicester out of it. Once in a while, Watford will get to the final, as they did. What happened to them when they got there? They got beat 6-0 of Man City. So we have to make sure that when we're talking about things like this, it's not just through Newcastle's eyes. Like us as fans of Newcastle, wanting the best for Newcastle, we have to look at the game in general and how it affects everyone else, because what the Premier League has been guilty of is just looking after themselves. And if they do that, it kills off everything below it. And then all of a sudden it becomes a problem, like a huge problem. Because there's not, we've talked about the Forests, the Evertons, all these in financial trouble. But I reckon Mitch could rattle 10 off from the top of his head in the Championship and below, who will be lucky to see the start of next season without some financial boosts. And that shouldn't be the case, because football was about the community and it was about passion and about the togetherness of the community. Now it seems to be commercially driven to the point where the ones who created football kept it going are the ones that are getting neglected until they get into financial trouble, and then they want the fans to start putting their hands in the pocket again to keep the club going.
Mm. Okay, lots of questions and stuff coming in. We'll try to get through as many as we can. Yeah, I agree. Derek says Gary Neville is complaining about FFP in his comments that we are being stifled by FFP. I did see that. Yeah, it was interesting. DJ Glasgow, he says, get PIF to get me gift me a billion and I'll donate it to the club. That's a way around it. Another question that we had earlier on was about the Amanda interview. Has either of you seen it?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, what did you make of it then, Stu? You were first in. What did you make of that interview?
Well, what I've been surprised at is that there's been no comeback from Steve Bruce's camp, who have been normally very vocal when they're attacked. And although, can you say she was attacking, what she didn't say Steve Bruce by name, but she said we had a manager who didn't really want to come to work. Now, even if it was a case of I knew I was leaving and I was just holding the reins until I was replaced, whatever, but nothing, not a thing's been said, which gives more credence to what she's actually said. And it was just strange that that was done in the way it was done. But fair play, it gave us all a smile, didn't it, when we heard her say it. And, you know, and the one thing about Amanda, she is very passionate, isn't she, when she's talking, and sometimes she'll say things that she shouldn't, but it comes from the heart. And that's why, if it wasn't for her, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about Newcastle in the Premier League and discussing chances of getting into Europe, because we were a ghost ship that was just drifting nowhere, and we could have been just where Sunderland are now, looking down rather than up towards the first division, rather than us looking at the top, can we get in these European places? But from what she's, what the question that got the most thing was what she said about Steve Bruce. But she worded a lot of other things very carefully about future plans and the difficulties that we face in being able to progress. But the what I got it from, what I read into it or heard from it, was progress we will. It seems to me that her and the board, and especially the owners, are more resolute than ever to make sure that Newcastle United becomes a success. So I was obviously happy to hear that.
Yeah, what was your thoughts on the interview? I thought it was quite good. I mean, Manda's very good at PR, Mitch.
She is. She always speaks very well. But in that forum, held in Saudi, in the current climate, I still think that the timing of mentioning the manager that didn't want to come to work is an interesting timing in it. I wondered what rattled the cage to get that out. And also, rather than hear her talk about that she thinks a Saudi team will be involved in the Champions League, I'd rather hear her talking about addressing problems within my own club, to be honest. Because we have got some fundamental problems there that need addressing that probably shouldn't be her role to get involved. Mm-hmm. But now that she seems to be directly involved in player contract negotiations, I think there's other things within the club. As Stu rightly says, it's very, very difficult to grow as quick as we did with some of the people that we've got in place and trying to promote from within and direct traffic that way. But there are people there who are protecting their own little fiefdoms and almost behaving like Ashley's still in charge when he's not. And it's not Ashley's problem now. It's Amanda Maydad's, Jamie Rubens and PAF's problem. And that needs to be addressed. But she always does come across well in sort of conference style speaking like that, because that's when you pick up on the enthusiasm. You and I have said before, there's times when we spoke with a man there and made that, we knew whether it was good news or bad news, just from her body language. She'd be a bloody terrible poker player. You know, very apparent when it was good news and very apparent when it wasn't necessarily such good news. So, you know, that's our strength and using her and like that. And that's what, again, putting a public face with a woman in charge when Saudi ownership's used as a stick to beat we're with, in an age where that's very much changing in Saudi Arabia, our role is almost perfect for that. And we benefit with an eloquent speaker who can fight Newcastle United's corner in any situation.
Yep, I would agree. Love our Amanda, says Mozza. The The interesting part of the Formula One this weekend was, of course, Al Ramayan briefly meeting Jose Mourinho, Mitch, which is now being turned into a he's meeting his new manager. I mean, you don't expect anything else, do you, really? You know, when something like that happens, it's always going to be Newcastle back page headlines through something of that. Gary mentioned it as well. Great show as always, lads. Should we look into the Jose Saudi showing on Friday fight night as welcome to Newcastle, Jose?
Well, he was at Anthony Joshua's fight, and he's obviously also met Anthony Joshua. So does that mean he's coming in as well, fitness coach?
Yeah,
you know, exactly. You can read too much into these things. Because of the teams he's managed and the high profile that he has, Jose Mourinho is well liked and well known to many royals in this part of the world. And will have met many of them, particularly anybody like our chairman, who's sports daft.
Yeah.
Really. You know, so there's just no coincidence there. I bet you can find pictures of them together at Pro-Am golf tournaments in the past as well. You know, that wouldn't surprise me one little bit. Doesn't mean he's coming in as my manager.
Yeah, it's a tenuous link, Stu.
Yeah, but there's something that Mitch missed out on Friday night. The Egyptian Cup was played in Riyadh.
Oh, it was, aye.
And before the game, Mourinho and the good Ronaldo, the original Ronaldo, the Brazilian one. He's not that the other one's not good, but the one, the better Ronaldo, in my opinion. He, both of them were paraded before, met the teams, etc., and they were there for the presentation of the trophy. There's a big push in Saudi that it's Riyadh season, which we know this is why they'll be trying to get the boxing done. It runs from October through to the beginning of March, so it's just about finished now, Riyadh season. This is why they wanted the fight that we're going to, Mitch, the Tyson Fury and Usyk fight was meant to be in February. So it's, and this is why, if I can link it to the sponsorships, this is why I'm saying, how can the Premier League decide? They would have paid Mourinho a king's ransom just to turn up there. But what we'll do is we'll fly you on your own plane, on a private plane, you'll stay in the best hotel, you'll go to the Egypt Cup, you'll get seen on television by tens of millions of people in the region, your profile will be higher, we'll take you to the Grand Prix, you can get front row seats at the boxing. He's doing nothing else. So, and he loves the limelight, doesn't he? So, of course, it's an easy win. So, just because he was there doesn't mean he's going to be Newcastle's manager. Why can't he be the next Al Hilal manager? You know, how do you know that wasn't under discussion? And just to see, they were sure of the best side of Saudi, because that would be a great coup for the Saudi Pro League, having someone like Mourinho as a manager. And remember, who's in charge of the Saudi Pro League? And he knows Mourinho from his time at Chelsea together. So no one's picked up on that. It's easy just to point the finger and, oh, this will cause a bit of unrest in Tyneside. So we'll say, oh, but that's Mourinho because he's in the same room as the owner. Well, he's definitely going to Newcastle. I'm sure Mourinho would love the job, but he's not getting it because Eddie Howe's got it. And I think Eddie Howe will be here for the long term. And what's been happening recently, it shows to me that the board are backing Eddie Howe, and he's come across better for it, and especially regarding the Dan Ashworth situation as well. And again, the press have went quiet on that, haven't they? Because they know that Newcastle are not going to budge. So it's either put up or shut up for Man United, and now all the more the press bluster, the more determined or resolute our owners will be. So that's maybe why they're more quiet and hopefully trying to get something negotiated. So I'll read nothing into Mourinho being in Saudi whatsoever.
Tom says, have you heard anything on the director of football situation? Do you think we're looking at anyone, Mitch?
I think everything's going to be left alone until after the summer. I think they're planning the summer recruitment for without the DOF. And then that'll be turned to once the summer window's closed. And we can't do any business until the January anyway.
Stu, same kind of thoughts as Mitch on that?
Yeah, very similar. They'll have a shortlist, but I don't think it's as necessary as what was initially required. You know, what Ashworth, I think they might want to resolve that first, but they'll have people lined up. The name I mentioned earlier in the week is was Paul Mitchell, just because he did such a good job in Germany and in France. But the guy who left Liverpool looks like he's going back there and taking the Bournemouth director. That was definitely coming to Newcastle because Eddie Howe used to manage them. You know, so it's crazy how things get linked. And it's the two words I keep using all the time when you speak about the press is lazy journalism. It's very easy just to link things to Newcastle. You've seen it every transfer window, haven't you, since we've been taken over. Any player that is looking for a move, any agent that's looking for a payoff, will always say, oh, Newcastle are interested as well. And that's why Barry Hogan was running, like, over 200 names were linked with him in the last few windows, isn't it? It's crazy.
That's why we did it. That's why we did it. To show how ludicrous it is.
But it's crazy and it's going to happen. So even if we sign four players in the summer, I'm sure we'll sign more because, you know, there's going to be a decent exodus. But even if we sign four players, we'll probably be linked with 300 or 400. So that means only one in 100 will be right. So when you get there, it'll be the agents trying to make the money. They're just doing the job. You know, if they've got a player who's linked with Liverpool and Man United, they'll say, oh, Newcastle are going to be in for him as well. That pushes it through quicker and they get the move that they want in the first place. But it's for us, it's good that we're getting linked with the top players now. And we just need a couple of them to fall our way. And this is why how we finish the season could have a big significance on where we were, where we go in the summer and beyond.
David says, do you think the Ashworth situation is a sort of payback for the Lingard transfer debacle? I don't think Newcastle will be that petty. I just think they're doing things properly, Mitch, I think.
Absolutely. And Man United are not doing things properly. I gather the club felt insulted by the recent quote-unquote official approach. It was almost like, well, you've seen it in the news. You know what we want. You know, it's quite arrogant, as the words I was told, from how Man United have approached Newcastle United to try and open a formal discussion. So, we stand our ground. Absolutely stand our ground. And the more information we can get about, has he been tapped up? Has he been in conversations? Has he recently been in conversations with people he wants to sign for Man United when he gets there? That's all more power to our elbow, because everybody should be acting properly. That's the way we did it with Brighton, and that's the way I would expect any other club to approach us in the same manner. And they haven't been. Simple as that. And we've got every right to be pissed. And for the sake of what I believe is £2 million, yeah, let them wait till the summer.
You agree, Stu, on that? I mean, I don't think they're doing this as a tit-for-tat. I just think Newcastle are just doing things properly.
No, but this is how the business gets done. They do it whether it's completed the way they wanted to do it or it goes against them, they'll conduct themselves in a professional manner. I'm talking about our owners. What Man United have done is they've come in, the new part owners have come in and they've started acting like the Manchester United fans that you speak to with a sense of entitlement. We're Manchester United, so you should be grateful. You should bow down to us and we won't get pushed around. And they will make a stand. Okay, you want him. This is how much he costs. And now we don't want him because he wants to leave. So he can ruin his career for the next 18 months or so, unless you pay him. If you want him that much, you'll pay for him because you've flirted enough with him through the press. And I'm sure if it was looked into hard enough, you could see where the leaks were coming from, and they weren't just it was always the usual suspects in with the Manchester views, shall we say, favoured views, that were promoting it to the point where they said it enough that everyone should believe that it's just going to happen and everyone should just accept it. Well, no, it won't. We won't get pushed over. And this is one of the best things the hierarchy at this club have done in the last few months. It's stand the ground. And they can't afford not to have him. And they can't afford to let him sit and rot. And believe me, if he seem to be influencing their transfers without being on their payroll, then they will go to town with him legally. Absolutely, they will. So we'll have to see now, do they want to put 20 million down and take him? Because irrespective, I think either any of us could go in there and do that job and save them with the way they've been conducting their transfer business. So the longer that we make them wait, the better it is for everyone else. It's probably the better it is for Man United as well, to be fair, because they won't just go and spunk the money as they have. But for all intents and purposes, he will end up there. But we will be seen as the winners. And I hinted at earlier that I think we'll come out of this triumphant with a very considerable compensation package. But don't be surprised to see a Manchester United player going to Saudi in the summer, which would then cover it.
Yeah, Steve Nixon was at the Manchester United Everton game. I guess just getting his homework done, Mitch, you would imagine that's what he was doing there. He's looking.
Is that not he's going to be the new Everton manager? Just like Mourinho is going to be the new Newcastle manager?
Possibly could be, yeah. He's doing his job, isn't he, Mitch? That's what he's paid to do. He's looking at players, and you know, he's looking at somebody at Manchester United or Everton. You know, there are one or two players there who you think, okay, they could probably do a job at Newcastle.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's doing his job. At the end of the day, you're right.
And we've also got to play them both in the coming weeks as well. So
could be just watching them for that purpose.
Yeah, I think he'd be watching two Everton players, as in Branthwaite and Onana. I think that's where they seem to be heading, isn't it? Centre half and centre midfielder. So I think that's, if he was good to scout for, I don't think it'd be any of the Man United players. First of all, I don't think they'd want to do business with us.
No.
And second of all, I don't think any of their players would really improve our team, especially with the attitudes they've got.
Yeah, Phil Scott said, Twitter mentality, small possibility FA runs a Tonali ban consecutively, really, until December. All kinds of wrong. Emmett says, off topic, do we have a rough idea about the capacity of the cellar stack will be? I'd hate to see the majority of fans not get in. I understand there needs to be a capacity limit, but get the fans in. I don't know what the capacity is going to be. I know the size of the site. If you wanted to chuck a figure in the air, I'd say probably... they're probably going to get 1,500 in that space, depending on how big it is. You know, 2,000 max, maybe. Yeah. But it's not the biggest of space. But I'd also say that I think a lot of people will go for the novelty. But people have their own routines, Emmett, on a match day, and they're not suddenly going to change. I think that will benefit massively from after the match. I think people will maybe meet there after the game, get the opportunity to pop outside, get a pint. If there's entertainment on, but you know, going up to the game, everyone's got their routines, and I think it'll be massively busy, you know, prior to the game. It might take business off Shearer's, you just don't know. But I'd say if I was going to hazard a guess, let me say 2,000, Emmett, but I stress that's a guess. I'm probably about right, Stu, you would imagine.
When the question was first asked, I didn't know the answer, but if I had to guess, I would have said 2,000. The only way round that can get it bigger or make it full to capacity every game is to actually show the game live for those who can't get to St James's and say, right, just as they do in Shearer's, put the game on, we'll put the game on there as well. And that would then help generate revenue, even for charge a tenner to get in. It would help generate revenue. And it wouldn't take it away really from the other pubs because you still go to those bars first. You just wouldn't be drinking them when the match is on because you're watching the game there. So it's possible, but I really don't know the answer to the question of what the capacity would be.
Yeah, I think you just want to know that it's going to be big enough, which you know, you look at the size of that space, Mitch. I think 1,500, 2,000 is probably as best it'll get in that area. Yeah, I know things, stacks of people will go.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to call in terms of what the capacity would be, but you've probably got a handle on the size of the venue. If it was Dubai, they'd just fill it until they couldn't fill any more and damn the consequences, because that's how things seem to be done here. A lot of venues like that are run like chaos over here. So yeah. I've got no idea what it would be like back home, to be fair. But it depends on what you can do with it, and the thing, people are touching on that rightly. If we're allowed to class it as part of the ground and you can show the game in it,
yeah,
that's a different matter. And I think that would also justify an entrance fee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Massively so. And that becomes a different beast in terms of income generation. So I think a lot would hinge on that for me.
Yeah, I would agree. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. Emmett, no problem. He says, thanks for the answer. Derek says, do you think Chris Rigg will become a Toon player? Of course, the young Jordy Boy, who's at Sunderland at the moment, is had a couple of opportunities. He's scored a goal, of course, for Sunderland down the road, but his family are all staunch black and whites, and lots of noise around him potentially moving to St James's Park. And Newcastle have in the last 2 years, recruited a lot of youth, Mitch. So Chris Rigg to Newcastle, do you think? Sunderland probably would find it difficult to turn the money down.
You have to look at their setup at the minute and the way they're headed both on and off the pitch. He's one of the few saleable assets that they have. And that's why they got him locked onto a longer contract recently. He's a saleable asset and one that under sustainability rules classes as homegrown. So it's there's more benefit to selling him in terms of how it looks on the balance sheet. His family are all black and white. I'm sure he would come in a heartbeat. You're right about being interested in signing decent youth players. He's got some championship experience under his belt, which ticks a lot of boxes for some people. Gave away an awful penalty yesterday, but he is just a pain, Yeah. And so for me, why the hell not?
Yeah. Chris Rigg for Newcastle, Stu?
If he's good enough. I mean, just because the Macams are saying he's great and it would be nice to get another one over of them. They've been very hospitable to us this season, haven't they? So just add to the fume. But looking at it, was it yesterday, the day before, the Juggins got, I nearly swore, they got beat 7-1 of Chelsea. So there's obviously room for improvement there. And as Mitch said, he's a Newcastle supporter. He goes to the games when he's not playing for them. So his family is from the area. And I'm sure it would be a dream move for him. And if we can get it done, then why not? I could see it happening, to be honest, because it was close last season. And I think he hasn't been given the minutes he was initially promised when he stayed. I think he was going to be promised more. But yeah. If anyone's got Macam friends, they'll all speak highly of him. But that's because he plays for them and he's from us and they feel that they've stolen something off us. So if he does come, he'd be rubbish if you listen to the bottom of the sea. But I think it's quite possible that he'll be in our setup next season.
There's logic in that. Mike, thanks, mate. He says the difficulty of accurately measuring fair market value relating to commercial or sponsorship deals means that illegal to the FFP rules is surely inevitable. I think we all agree on that. What would happen if we simply ignore FFP, build a world-beating team and just accept any punishment? Then how long for us to win the Premiership? Guy, I mean, yeah, lots of people saying, well, if it's only going to be 6 points, we might as well do it. But, it'll be Newcastle United's punishment.
We'd have to be called Man City if we did that, though, because that's what they've done.
Yeah.
The next key weight point for me is what happens to Chelsea.
Yeah.
That'll tell me whether they mean to keep having some bite with FFP rulings or not. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's the next waypoint, because that'll happen before Man City, because that's a simpler case than Man City's, complicated by government intervention and world political status. Mm-hmm. But I still think. They wanted to run roughshod through it, and because they didn't think they were going to get a sporting penalty and they'd just accept a financial penalty. I think their attitude's probably changed a little bit now. And I think their hope was they could blame everything on the nasty Russian man.
Yep.
And that's looking like that's not going to be possible too. So, being interesting. Interesting point for us to see what happens then. Then we'll really see how much teeth the Premier League want to show with FFP if they dare.
Yeah. Giopardini, you've got a good point. He said Northern League 2 relegation for being 10 million over the FFP guidelines if it's the tune. Yeah, that's my worry, Giopardino. There'll be a rule for one club and a different rule for Newcastle United. You're not wrong, kidder. Okay, just to finish off, Mitch, we already know your prediction and we've already done the dice on Friday, but we do play Chelsea tomorrow live on Sky, 8 o'clock kickoff, Stu. It's I've already said it, and people in the chat have said it tonight as well. Alan Thompson in particular. This is a big one for Newcastle tomorrow. I Newcastle win tomorrow. They're still well and truly in you know the runners and riders for Europe. If they lose tomorrow, it's not all over, but you know it's a mountain to climb. They need then to find some form, and you know they need to beat Chelsea tomorrow, and it'll put a 7-point gap between us and Chelsea. That's huge at this stage of the season going into the final run-in. So how do you see this going tomorrow?
Well, I mentioned last week beating Wolves was like a sliding doors moment, but it only will be if we go on and get a decent positive result tomorrow. But look at the games we've got left. I think if we get over 60 points, we'll get into Europe. So we need to get like 2 points a game just about. And so that means we're going to have to win our home games and draw the away games, the old adage. And we're capable of doing that. There's no one left for us to play that we should be thinking, oh, we'd be happy just to get a draw from that. Chelsea are one of these teams that could turn up and everyone plays well for them. And, you know, they're capable of flashes of brilliance. They've drawn twice with Manchester City. But they're also capable of just throwing the towel in. So this is where I go back to how Liverpool played against Manchester City this afternoon. If we go there and sit back and try and contain them, then I think we'll get a negative result. But I think if we go there and say, look, this is us, we're going to force our style on you, silence the crowd and get in behind them, use our pace as well as they'll try and use their pace, I can see us coming away with a 2-0 victory and Isak getting both goals.
Okay. Fingers crossed. I'm going to go up a 6-0 to Chelsea. Wink, wink. Let's hope that's the case. And Newcastle are, back in European contention. Great show, everyone. Thanks to Steve, Stu and Mitch for their insight. Hit the likes on the way out, says Mozza. And I did write this today, and it is Mother's Day. Mother's Day, a celebration held each year across the nation. Thanks to mams for all they do, like giving life and raising you. Respect your mam, you only get one. The heartache's real when she is gone. Happy Mother's Day to everybody out there, and I hope you've all been spoiled rotten. I'll be back 6 o'clock tomorrow with the fans forum. But for now, thanks to Stu, thanks to Mitch. Take care, lads.
Good day, everyone.